problem with generosity. And if we can make sure that we can get that changed on the website too. I think Maylene usually puts that up there. And for those of you who don't know, Maylene does most of our web stuff and our email stuff. So anything you get from us that is technological in any sense or designed well in any sense is usually from her. So thank her for her hard work when you get a chance to. As I've been working through the Sermon on the Mount on my own, there's a couple things that have been kind of happening to me. I've been trying to take a big kind of bird's eye view of everything, and when you look at it that way, it's really amazing to see that we are 1/3 of the way through the sermon, and it is an incredible, in a sense, it's a very compacted compendium of Christian living. Now, Jesus addresses a lot of things in a very short amount of space, and he does it in a way that is careful and yet incredibly powerful. Jesus doesn't just kind of throw words around. He teaches these things, and it really is amazing to see the depth to which he can talk about something and yet do it in such a small form, small fashion. And so it really is, for me at least, it's been really intriguing to go through this. It's also been interesting to look at it in detail, and that's really what's caused the change this week, is I wanted to approach these four verses from more of kind of a bird's eye view, and I realized more and more that we need to look at what this is specifically talking about. We can talk about the fact that Jesus here is looking at piety and religion, but I think I wanted to get more into this issue that he is, as he's talking about piety, he starts off with this discussion on generosity, on what I get the old term for it. If you have a King James or a New King James, they usually call it almsgiving. And basically what it is acts of mercy, kindness, generosity, those types of things. If you notice, I did want to title the sermon very specifically, The Problem with Generosity, and what we're going to be talking about is that there are some spiritual dangers to our mercy, to our generosity, to our giving. I'm not going to give you so many or to such a degree that you say, okay, well, maybe I should stop being generous for a while. You know, it's not those kinds of problems. But there are some kind of issues that go along that Jesus wants to point out. And this is the section where he does specifically talk about Christian piety. He talks about generosity. He moves into prayer. And then he talks about fasting. And these are all pieces of piety that are common to almost every other religion. Jews especially. Jews expected, if you were a Jew in this time especially, you were expected to give and to be generous, to do acts of mercy. You were expected to pray, and you were expected to fast. If you notice, what Jesus is doing here is he's not recasting piety. You know, Jesus, it's clear from what Jesus says that he expects his followers to do these things too. And so we see over and over at each section, he says, when. He doesn't say if, he says when you show generosity, when you give, when you pray, when you fast. So Jesus isn't recasting piety in a holistic sense, but he's saying there is a danger to the way that others do them. The interesting part to me is as we go through this, I was really interested in the fact that Jesus speaks against worldliness, against irreligion. You know, he speaks against very overt forms of running and rebelling from God. But Jesus also speaks out against religion itself. You know, he speaks about out against the things that the synagogue, people in the temple, the Jews are doing at the time. And it really reminds me of the fact that the gospel is neither religion or irreligion. The gospel says that both are very dangerous. You know, that there are things about being irreligious that are incredibly dangerous, but there are also things about being religious, about following rules and about, you know, setting your life in a certain way just because that's what's expected. Or that in some way by doing this you will gain certain things. There's a danger to that too. And so as we go through this, Matthew chapter 6, we're not necessarily going to talk about why we should be generous, even though we'll touch on that at the end. But Jesus addresses this question of how should we give? How should we be generous? How should we be merciful? And what we see is a gospel picture of what true mercy looks like. Okay, so as we go through this, we're going to see essentially three guidelines, three ways in which generosity can be driven by the gospel. The first is we're told to give in secret. Second, we're told to give without conscience. Third, we're told to give for a reward. Okay, so those three things: give in secret, give without conscience, and give for a reward. Okay, first, give in secret. Let me read verses 1 and 2. But Jesus starts this section, and he says, beware. And whenever Jesus says beware, we should beware. He says, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. Now, again, you know, Jesus says beware, and he's warning us that there is a danger to doing good, to practicing generosity, to doing mercy, to helping the poor, helping the homeless, helping the naked. You know, all these types of things. There are dangers to it, and in a very immediate sense, we say, isn't this a contradiction? I mean, just a chapter ago, Jesus is saying, let your light shine before the world. Let people know, light isn't meant to be hidden under a bushel. You know, we're meant to take it out so that everyone can see our light. Now he's saying, beware, don't let people see. You know, what's going on? Which is it? Should we be secretive or should we be public? Well, Jesus isn't giving a contradiction. He's speaking about two different types of sin. When Jesus says, let your light shine, he's speaking out against the sin of cowardice, the fact that sometimes as Christians, we fear. We fear what's going to happen if we say we're Christians. We fear what's going to happen if we act in line with our Christian beliefs, our Christian convictions, our faith. Here, what Jesus is talking about, though, is he's talking about the sin of pride, of spiritual arrogance. You know, that there's a danger, you know, that in doing good, we could be doing good for our own good and not for the good of others, the good of God. And that there is a real inherent spiritual pride, spiritual arrogance that comes with that. And so that's the reason why in chapter 5 he can say, let your light shine. Here he can say, be careful. Don't do these things in front of people, right? There's those two things going on. I think the other thing that's interesting is here, Jesus gives this really funny caricature of people who are doing things the wrong way. If you go into the end of verse 2, he says, thus when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Jesus here is it seems like he's talking about the Pharisees, and he does this really nasty thing. He calls them hypocrites. I don't know if you've ever thought about where the term, the idea of hypocrite comes from. It's actually a Greek term that's used. It's used in classical Greek, and it's used in the context of, imagine you were to go see a drama or a play. The term was used of someone who first would get out in front of everyone as an orator, as kind of a narrator, as someone who's, you know, telling a story, and then he would shift from being an orator to then becoming an actor. So think about what that means. You know, he goes from being one character, one thing, to being a different thing. And, you know, actors have very unique, you know, they pretend they're someone else, but they're really not. You know, they get up on stage, and on stage it's fine. On stage there is an understanding by the audience and by the actors that the actor is not portraying himself, that he might not be saying things that he would naturally say. There is this understanding that when someone is standing up on a stage, they can be completely false about themselves, and it's okay. And so Jesus kind of picks up this term, and he says what they're doing is they're being hypocrites. They're acting one way when they're really something else. And you know, it's a terrible charge. It's a very serious charge. I think we tend to throw the word around, but it's a very serious charge. You know, you call someone a hypocrite or someone calls you a hypocrite, it's very serious. They're saying, hey, you know, you're not acting in line with who you really are. You're putting on a show. And this isn't a play. You're not on a stage. What are you doing? You know, it's a very serious charge. I think the other part that's interesting is he caricaturizes that. I haven't found anyone that says whether they did this or not, but he says this is what they do. They go into the synagogues to give. They go into the streets to give. And there are trumpets blaring before. I mean, imagine that. Imagine you had an extra big check today for offering. And you know, on your way in, you hire a processional. So there's a trumpeter. There's like a guy with big bass drum. Maybe you have someone with the baton. And as you walk into church, you have these guys go in front of you. And so guys throwing the baton, there's trumpets blaring, guys hitting the drum as you're coming down the aisle to put your check into the plate, or as you're going out to the homeless shelter to present your check. I mean, that's what Jesus is saying. He's saying, here's what they're doing. And again, it might not be literal. It's probably just a caricature. But even imagine that. And Jesus is saying that there's an issue with that. That some people give and they want it to be a show. They want everyone to know. They want everyone to see. They want everyone to say, what a wonderful person. Look at the piety. Look at the sacrifice. Look at the generosity. Look at the care that they must have for, look at them. And Jesus is saying, that's exactly the problem. We can give, but there are a lot of different motivations to our giving. That some giving is actually problematic, that some giving is spiritually dangerous, that some giving actually doesn't make us better, it makes us far, far worse. And that's what Jesus is warning about. That there are certain motivations in giving that reveal that we are not better people, we are far worse people. He says that there are different motives. We can do it to praise, we can do it for the praise of men, so that people say, how wonderful. Or we can do it for the praise of God. And that's something completely different. So one of the things we have to ask ourselves is, well, how do we protect ourselves? Well, Jesus says, here's what you do. Give in secret so that it's not seen by others. Give in secret. I don't know if you've ever realized this, but that's actually one of the very subtle reasons why, there's some churches that use plates, where it's kind of open, and I think some churches prefer the thing where you stick your hand in and no one can see. And not that we're any more biblical or any more spiritual, but I mean, that's just kind of where that comes from, is that, in some ways it's kind of hidden. But essentially what he's saying is what the gospel does is the gospel reduces, it reduces the need for us to want or to desire or to need the praise of other people. The gospel says you are deeply loved by God. The gospel says that on the cross, Jesus showed us his love for us, and it is that love that completes us. It's that love that fills us. It's that love that satisfies. And if you know that you're loved by God, if you know that you're deeply loved by God, then you don't need the approval. You don't need the adulation of other people. And it's that gospel then allows us to be secret in our giving. That allows us to not have to feel like we have to show everything off, that we have to be praised by other people, that we know other people say, how wonderful a person, how generous, how thoughtful, how kind, how merciful. But it's the gospel that actually frees us so that now we're able to truly give in secret, not worrying about what anyone says, good or ill. And that's an incredible thing. That's one of the ways in which the gospel frees us in our generosity, is it allows us then to give in secret. And Jesus says there is a problem. The problem is there is the possibility that in giving we do it for the praise of others, so that they will say wonderful, great things about us. And that is a danger. So that's the first thing that he warns against. And he says, give in secret. Second directive he gives is he says, give without conscience. And this one is a little bit harder to understand, but Jesus says this thing, and I'm going to read verses 2 and 3. It's 3 that I really wanted to focus on, but Jesus says, then when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly I say to you, they have received their reward. Here's verse 3. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right is doing. Now, that's a very creative way to say something. I mean, obviously, left hand, right hand, you get the idea, the general idea that it has to do with secrecy, right? There's something about kind of, the idea is being secret. But when you look at it carefully, it's kind of strange. It's a strange way to say that. Don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. In in this kind of verbiage, you know, your right hand is normally the one that's the active hand. You know, it's the one that gives, it's the one that does. And when Jesus says, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, there's a sense in which, in general, he's saying, don't even tell yourself what you're doing. You know, in some ways, kind of there's this internal secrecy. And again, you know, I listen to that and I go, I don't know how to do this. Does that mean when I come to church to write a check, I should just, you know, kind of do one of these jobs, or I should just have all my money mixed up in my wallet and, you know, do one of those and whatever comes out, comes out? Probably not, but I think this is what Jesus is getting at. I think he's pointing out that there's a second danger. The first danger is what we want people on the outside to say. I think a second danger is what generosity can do to us and what it makes us say about ourselves. I mean, think about this for a second. You know, there is a spiritual pride, a spiritual arrogance that comes with giving in a flaunt, in a big way. And honestly, you know, just to be honest, kind of across the board, I think most of us here don't struggle with that, partly because most of us don't have, like, that much to give. You know, like, I don't think any of us have $1 million to give away to some medical facility where they're going to plaster our name up somewhere. I don't think we have, you know, a lot to give in terms of, like, our school so that they build a building in our name, or, you know, there's a brick somewhere that has our etching in it because we gave, or that type of thing. I think for most of us, we're not in danger of that. And I think for most of us, have this sensibility that in general, we do kind of give in secret. You know, and again, a lot of times it's because we can't give as much as other people do sometimes. But I think for most of us, we're pretty sensitive about that. We don't want people knowing, you know, how much we're giving or not giving to a certain organization or to a certain group or sponsorship or whatever else. We do tend to keep that quiet. But what Jesus says kind of addresses the other part, which is this. There's another danger of spiritual pride, and it's this. We can give in secret, and we can take extreme measures to keep our giving secret, but after giving, we can allow ourselves to see our own giving and to become self-congratulatory. In other words, we can spend all of our time, even if no one says a thing about our giving, and we can pat ourselves on the back, can't we? We can write a check, and then we can let the fact that we wrote this check, we gave this money, and we did this thing, we can use it to pat ourselves on the back and become self-righteous about it and say, wow, I'm a wonderful person because, I mean, it really was hard to be sacrificial in this way, yet I was. And, you know, we use that inner judgment to look at others and say, oh, they're probably not giving as much as I gave here. They probably didn't give as much to the mission trip as because they don't care as much about the mission as I do. And you know, there's a danger that comes from the outside, you know, doing things to please others, to get other people to say wonderful things. There's also danger on the inside. Giving in such a way in which now I dwell on it and I say, wow, I must be getting more spiritual than I thought. You know, I must be loving God and his mission and his plan even more than I believe, because here I was willing to give so much more. And look at everyone else. I mean, sure, they were writing checks, but they're probably nowhere near as big as I was, or they weren't giving as much time as I was. I mean, I'm the one going out, and I, you know, instead of writing a check and that's easy, I'll go out and I'll do this and I'll help people and I'll give and I'll, I mean, there's so many ways in which our giving can actually infect us, can't it? There's so many ways in which our sinful soul, our sinful heart can take something that is really, really good and extract from it the worst. Now, there's ways in which we can give that even if no one else knows, we know, and we're keeping count. I mean, that's a horrible thing. I think in a lot of ways, that's exactly what Jesus is saying, when he says, don't even let your right hand know what your left hand, don't even know what your left hand knows or right hand is doing. You know, there is a self-righteousness that builds up, and pretty soon you look at God and you say, God, I can see why you love me. I'm a pretty good dude. I mean, I do all these wonderful things, and I'm trying to give, and I'm trying to, and I might not be the best, but I'm certainly better than all these other people. And we do that all the time. Do that all the time. And there is an intense danger to that. We dwell on those things in our minds, and it causes us to feel better than others. We become more judgmental, and we even use those things before God. We say different times later on, we say, God, don't you remember what I did for you? Don't you remember how I sacrificed for you in these? Don't you remember how I gave these things up for you know, because I wanted to do this for you? And we use them to build our own approval. So how do we protect ourselves from that? I was trying to think of a really cool way to say it, and there really isn't. But I think what Jesus is telling us is he's telling us to give and forget. You know, just simply, when we give, forget it. Now let that be the end of it. And again, that isn't our nature a lot of times. You know, if we do extraordinary giving, or if we're tithing or giving to the church in ways that are more than others, there's ways in which we remember that. You know, when the church budget comes out and we're short, we say, but I was giving more, or to a mission trip, or to this or that. There's ways in which we say, but I remember what I did for this. I did more than my part. Jesus is saying, when you give, don't dwell on it. Just forget it. And that's a very spiritually healthy way. Like I said, Jesus recognizes that there is a danger from the outside. He also recognizes there's a danger from the inside. So those are the first two. He says, what was the first one? He said, give in secret, and he says, give without conscience. Third thing he says, give for a reward. This one's a little bit, again, each one's a little bit more complex. But look at verse 3, and this is what Jesus says here. He says, but when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Now, this is one I'll admit to you very, very readily. This is a passage that I've always had a lot of problems with. There's a handful of times in the Gospels where Jesus talks about a reward, and I've always been very, very uncomfortable about that. I think for some of us, we feel that way. You know, when Jesus mentions reward of any type, we kind of feel like, well, is that really like what we should be doing? Should we really be doing something because there's something out there that's a reward for us? And you know, the way I rationalized it as a young Christian was, you know, when you get into Revelation, there's this part where, you know, every knee will bow, every tongue will confess that we will go before the throne, and then essentially we'll lay all our crowns at Jesus' feet. In other words, anything we get from him will return back to him. And that soothed my heart. That made me feel a little better about it. But I don't know really how, if that's really a biblical picture of what Jesus is talking about here. You know, he does have reward in mind, and he is saying very clearly, he's saying your Father will reward you. He says there is, you know, there is a reward at the end of it. And I think to some degree, I was kind of avoiding it, and I was being disingenuous about what Jesus was saying. But it is clear. Jesus is making his case very clear. He says, don't do it in public, or else you've received your reward. Do it in private so that it's secret, and God will reward you. And again, it's hard to hear, and it hits against our sensibilities because we say, doesn't that just channel one type of selfishness into another? You know, if you imagine God giving you this reward, aren't you just exchanging one bad deed for another bad deed? Aren't you just saying, well, now instead of the praise and adulation of people, I'm going to get the praise and adulation of God? You know, it's one of those things like, how much better am I really going to be? But I think what Jesus is talking about is different. I don't think Jesus is imagining the ceremony in heaven where the trumpets blare and he goes, okay, now the category is everyone who gave in secret, you know, and then everyone starts marching up and he gives them a diploma or puts like a medal on them. I don't think that's what Jesus is kind of dealing with and what he's talking about. There's actually, in C.S. Lewis's The Weight of Glory, there's this interesting thing that he says that commentators have picked up on recently that I think is really helpful. But he says this in his essay. He's talking about rewards and God who rewards. He says, We must not be troubled by unbelievers when they say that this promise of reward makes the Christian life a mercenary affair. Okay? It says these are different kinds of reward. It says there are different kinds of reward. There is a reward which has no natural connection to the things you do to earn it, and it is quite foreign to the desires that ought to accompany those things. Money is not the natural reward of love. That is why we call a man mercenary if he marries a woman for the sake of her money. But marriage is the proper reward for real love, and he is not a mercenary for desiring it. See, what he's saying there is he's saying that there are different kinds of rewards. Some are unnatural. And you know what would be unnatural? It would be unnatural to think, hey, if I help the poor, then when I get to heaven, I'll get some beautiful riches. I mean, that's unnatural. You know, it's unnatural to say, I'll give to this and I'll get something completely different and it'll be this wonderful thing. And what C.S. Lewis points out is that there are some rewards. You know, if you seek for something that's not connected, then you're a mercenary. It's selfishness. Then you're not really doing what's good for the good of itself. You're doing it for this other thing, and there's a problem with that. And C.S. Lewis goes on to say, but there is a reward. There is a reward that comes naturally from those things. So if you listen to his illustration again, he says, you know, there is a reward of love. You know, you marry a woman for money, and that's a bad thing. You know, you get to know a woman, you spend time with her, and the reward of love is marriage. That's a good thing. And you know, I think about that, and I read commentators who also kind of go in that direction. That makes a lot of sense to me. That there is an inherent reward tied into doing something that doesn't make us more selfish. It doesn't make us worse people, but it's simply the natural result of doing that thing. So the question is, well then, what's the reward of helping the needy? What's the reward of being generous? What's the reward of doing good things? If it's not a ceremony in heaven, if it's not a crown that Jesus puts on my head, if it's not some special blessing that God will do this other wonderful thing in my life, what is the reward of helping the needy, of feeding the hungry, of doing mercy to those who have not and cannot? John Stott put it this way, but essentially he said in a lot of ways the greatest joy of mercy, the greatest joy of doing any of those things is the joy of seeing the needy helped. The joy, the reward of feeding the hungry is seeing the hungry fed. The reward of clothing the naked is seeing the naked clothed. The joy of helping those who are hurting is seeing the hurting comforted. The joy of seeking the lost is seeing the lost found. And Stott goes on to say that that by itself becomes a reward, and it is God's grace to us. That in doing something, we can experience true selfless joy in what has happened to another and not even realize that we've been a part of it. That's a wonderful reward, isn't it? And that kind of reward doesn't make you selfish. It doesn't make you say, hey, I'm going to go do this and I'm going to get this wonderful thing back. No. It's simply the natural cause of doing it. And you know, that's the one reward that will never spoil us, that will never turn us away from God, that will never harden our hearts, and that will never ruin us. You know, when we say that we should be giving for a reward, I don't mean that there's something out there later on that you should be waiting for, or that this is a chip, that later on when your life turns bad, you can go to God and say, God, remember when I did this, or something that you're waiting for in heaven, that you say, boy, if heaven could just be like this. When Jesus talks about giving for a reward, he's talking about the fact that in the things that we do, God blesses us with the natural result of the things that we are doing. And in those things, we find true joy and we glimpse into the true heart of God. And that is our reward. You know, the question I did want to answer that we do have to answer whenever we talk about things like this is we do have to answer the question of, well, why should we be generous? Why should we give? It's a question of extreme importance. And the Bible addresses that in other places very, very simply, very, very directly. But Paul tells us, and we find out in the Gospels, that the reason why we should give is because when we were spiritually poor, when we were impoverished, when we were spiritually needy, God was generous to us. And the amazing thing is that when we think about that, you know, how do we know when someone is being generous to us? Well, it's by degree. The degree to which they give of their treasures, the degree to which they give of things that are important to them shows us the degree to which we have experienced mercy and generosity, right? So if you're someone who's sitting on the street asking for money, someone throws a quarter at you, not a big deal. Someone stops and writes a huge check, that's a big deal, right? And you see that there are different degrees of generosity. When someone shows you more generosity, there is a different response than someone who shows you a little bit of generosity. That one is similar but not like the other. And you know, the amazing thing about the gospel, when you begin to understand what God did and that the cross is about God's generosity, the thing that amazes me beyond all other things is that God's generosity is on an unprecedented scale. In other words, what God did was God gave a treasure beyond all treasures to us, that when we were spiritually poor, when we were spiritually impoverished, when we were spiritually needy, God did something that was unfathomable. If you remember, when Jesus was being baptized, God spoke, and he spoke actually a very, very important phrase, a very important piece for us to know. As Jesus was there being baptized by John the Baptist, the heavens opened up, a dove came down, and if you remember, the voice of God said something very particular. Remember what he said? He said, this is my one, my only, my beloved, my son. Why would God say that? Well, it's not just an identifier. He's not saying, hey, guys, you know, it's not that he put a little name sticker on that says, my name is, and then he had it on there. The reason why he says it is because he's telling us the degree of generosity that he's going to show us on the cross. Rather than pouring out the treasures of heaven, God has decided to give us a treasure beyond all other treasures, his one, his only, and his beloved. And when you realize that that's what God has given to you, then all of a sudden you become someone who never worries about being stingy, never worries about giving too much, who never worries about why or how to give. When you realize that the God of heaven and earth gave you a treasure beyond treasures, his one, his only, his beloved, to live in your place, to die in your place, and to raise you to life, then all of a sudden that answers the question, why should we be generous? Why should we be merciful? Why should we give? Because everything has been given to us. Because Jesus has given us even, God has given us even his own son. Why don't we pray together? And again, let's allow that truth to sink into us and to make us hopefully more generous. Heavenly Father, thank you again for hopefully a fruitful Sunday, a Sunday in which we have once again been challenged by the message of the gospel. Well, lots of people are generous. But Lord, lots of people are generous for lots of different reasons. And some of their generosity makes them worse people, not better people. Well, they desire the applause of men, or they want to give and then sit back and say, oh, what a wonderful person I am. But Lord, generosity is not about what we can give. It is truly about what has been given to us. And the gospel tells us, Lord, that you have given even your one, your only, your beloved. And so, Lord, may that drive our generosity. May that drive our desire to be merciful. May that inform the ways in which we are generous and merciful, so that we simply desire for people to see Jesus in the things that we do. And may our reward simply be that the hungry are fed, that the naked are clothed, that the lost are found. May that be our ultimate delight, and may you receive all the glory, honor, and praise. Thank you again for sending your son Jesus to live and then to ultimately die in our place. And with his death, but in his resurrection, that you have given us new life. I pray this in Jesus' name.